Let me just briefly describe what's going to be a priority this week here in the Senate, at least in the work I'm doing, and that relates to this oil spill, oil disaster in the Gulf of Mexico, the BP oil rig. We're having a hearing on Thursday in the Energy Committee that will focus on proposed legislation that we've developed to give the Secretary of Interior authority to restructure the Minerals Management Service and with increased emphasis on safety and accountability to ensure that adequate safeguards are in place to prevent this kind of a incident from occurring in the future. We'll have Secretary Salazar, I believe, there on Thursday testifying as to his views on that proposed legislation and whether it does the job that he needs to have done as far as giving full authority to the Secretary and his team to deal with the situation. And we'll undoubtedly get testimony for and against the legislation. We're also tomorrow, on Tuesday, having a hearing on some proposed legislation to put in place additional incentives to move people to use of electric-powered vehicles and to facilitate the shift from such great dependence on foreign oil and oil more generally and gasoline refined from that oil to use of electricity and transportation. When we talk about reducing our need for oil in the economy, most of that involves reducing our need for oil in the transportation sector of the economy. So I think this is particularly relevant to the problems we've seen in the Gulf. So those are the subjects we're going to be spending a lot of time on this week. And let me just open it up to questions. Let's start with you, Bill. Are you there?
That you're going to be at the White House, or others will be at the White House, discussing energy bills. Will you be part of that meeting with the president?
Yes, I will be. I think that's Wednesday.
And what do you plan to bring up? You got your bill. There are others. What will happen there?
Well, we had a meeting with the president similar to this, I believe, several months ago, where he basically asked everyone what they thought was possible and how we could proceed. I assume that that's what we'll do again at the meeting on Wednesday. Obviously, he stated many times his preference to pass comprehensive energy legislation in this Congress, including some type of limit on greenhouse gas emissions. And I'm sure he'll be asking people who are there what their views are on how we could possibly accomplish that.
Editorial today says that he should have been more explicit in his address last week, calling for something more than just a conventional energy bill. Do you think he should have been?
Well, I don't know that I would criticize him for what he said. I think he did say that he wanted a comprehensive energy legislation passed. The reality is we've got to look and see what we have the votes to pass in the Senate. And that, I think, is still problematic as far as passing a cap-and-trade system such as the president has advocated for in the past. But we need to take a nose count of senators. Perhaps we need to have some test votes to see where the votes are. And my position has always been we should do all we can to move in the direction of an energy bill that transitions us to a clean energy economy.
Okay, I'll pass for now. Thanks.
All right. Larry, are you there?
I am, Senator. How's it going?
Okay, how are you?
I'm good, sir. In that same editorial from the New York Times, they called a bill that you're bringing forth requiring utilities to generate 15% of their power from renewable resources by 2021. They say it's an honorable bill, but falls short because it doesn't include mandatory greenhouse gas reductions. It may be a silly question, but do you agree with their assessment on the bill?
Well, I do agree that we should add to that bill that we've reported out of our Energy Committee, we should add something that does put us on a track to reducing greenhouse gas emissions. And I've supported that in the past, and I would expect to support responsible measures along that line in the future. So I don't disagree that it would be ideal if we could do it all. I don't know if the votes are there to get that accomplished.
Well, if you feel it's a good idea, was it not the right place to put it in your bill there, or do you just feel it doesn't have the vote?
No, the committee that I chair doesn't have jurisdiction to be trying to legislate in that area, and so we did not try to legislate in that area. But I think that if the full Senate wants to move in that direction, then I think, and if we have a good proposal before us to accomplish that, I think it's something we ought to try to do.
And then just one more, Senator, switching subject a little bit. Obviously, New Mexico is watching closely Medicaid funding and the formula that comes out of Washington and predicting possibly a shortfall if things stay as they are for the state's budget. What can you tell us about the chances for that funding? Has that changed at all since we spoke about it last?
Well, I think the truth is we're having difficulty finding the necessary votes to go ahead and maintain the enhanced Medicaid funding rate that we put in place as part of the Recovery Act. Under normal circumstances, the state of New Mexico receives about 71 cents for every dollar that it spends on Medicaid, receives 71 cents from the federal government. The enhanced Medicaid program gets that up to closer to 81 cents for every dollar that the state spends on Medicaid comes from the federal government. What we were trying to do here in the Senate, and what we are still trying to do, is to go ahead and extend the enhanced Medicaid level of federal support for a six-month period so that the state would be able to count on that through the entire fiscal year till the 1st of July of 2011. I don't know if we can get the votes to do that. It's been difficult so far.
Senator, that's all I have. Thank you, sir.
Okay. John, are you there?
Yes, sir. Good morning. And I guess the question you hear on the weekend, you know, the television shows is the cleanup of the Gulf and then having an energy policy. And how do you separate those two issues out? Because some people are cynical, thinking maybe the administration and others are using the Gulf crisis as a way to, say, get the cap-and-trade bill through. How do you separate the two issues out?
Well, I think they both relate to our policy and our practices with regard to energy, and to that extent they certainly relate to each other. But there's no question that the spill itself is going to require a fairly direct response, and that is legislation like we're going to be considering on Thursday to restructure the functioning of the Minerals Management Service so that they put greater emphasis on safety and on accountability and are in a better position to prevent these kinds of spills and disasters in the future. That kind of legislation changing the provisions that limit liability for spills that occur, those kinds of things I think need to be done as a direct response to the spill in the Gulf. I think there are many who are arguing that as part of our response to the spill in the Gulf, we ought to take on this broader question of how do we reduce our dependence on fossil fuels, and that involves, of course, beginning to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. But it is a more attenuated argument when you're trying to argue for caps on greenhouse gases as a result of what's happened in the Gulf.
Everyone has their opinions, but besides obviously stopping the flow of oil, how do you think BP is attacking the problem, at least in your opinion?
Well, the main task before them was to stop the flow of oil into the Gulf, the uncontained flow of oil into the Gulf, and frankly, they've tried a lot of different things, but they're still not succeeding in that task. So I think that's the ultimate way you measure them. The payment to people for claims, for damages done and all. I know they've been moving ahead on that, but now the president, of course, has urged them to establish a different mechanism, put money in a separate escrow account with Ken Feinberg, who I think is going to be the person in charge of making payments for damages done in the Gulf and trying to ensure that people are compensated to the extent that it is justified. So I think that is a step forward, too. Obviously, you can make valid criticisms about how quickly that's come about, but that's sort of where it is at this point.
One other quick question regarding energy. You mentioned the idea of electric cars, and how practical would that be here in the West, like where you are in the Northeast, where everything is so close together? It seemed like it would work, but sometimes out here, one might wonder.
Well, I think that's right. That's a valid concern, and I do think that that's one reason that some companies are, for example, the General Motors and the Volt, which they're getting ready to market this next year, I believe, they would anticipate having an onboard gasoline-powered engine, which would be there to take over at any point where the electrical system was no longer adequately charged to function. So I think that may be a more viable option for areas such as the West, where you do have long distances. We're back to you. Let me see here if Jim ever came in. Jim Williams, are you there? I don't hear Jim. Bill, did you have any other questions?
I do. While that BP rig in the Gulf is still spewing oil, there's another BP rig very deep, maybe deeper at 6,000 feet, called the Atlantis. A consumer group has sued the MMS for allegedly not looking at BP internal documents that said a lot of questions were unanswered before that rig was put in place and they could lead to operator error. Should BP be allowed to continue, as this Westshore group wants it not to continue, operating that particular rig and maybe others?
Well, of course, the president has put in place a moratorium on additional drilling on rigs that have not yet become producing wells. And there are 33 of those, I believe, that are currently under development. These are wells that are under development in the Gulf in deep water areas. So I think I assume that covers this rig you're talking about.
No, this is a producing well that's been in operation for a couple of years.
Oh, it is. Oh,
and
okay.
MMS apparently did not, according to this watchdog group, which is suing, did not review allegations that there were hundreds, thousands of documents, perhaps, saying there could be errors because all the engineering was not completed.
Well, I don't know enough of the specifics about the well, but if it is a producing well and has been producing for a couple of years and it is not malfunctioning in any way or leaking oil in any way, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the lawsuit is asking for in the way of damages, but shutting down the well, I don't know that would make good sense unless there's some problem with the way the well is functioning.
Perhaps this can come up at your hearing on the Minerals Management Service.
Yeah, it may be a good subject to ask them about.
One more thing. It's difficult for people to get their heads around the extent of this oil spill. Many people are alarmed. Some are not alarmed. Maybe since you've seen all the evidence and we've seen little, what would be your level of anxiety and concern about the BP spill in the Gulf now, maybe on a scale of 1 to 10? How concerned are you about its impact?
Well, I'm very concerned about its impact, particularly in its impact on some of the communities there in the Gulf and the people in the fishing industry and others. I do think that every day we are watching to see whether or not they can actually stop the flow of oil into the Gulf. And if they could do that in the reasonably near future, then at least the amount of the damage at that point is more accessible. At this point, since we don't yet know a date when the spilling of the oil will cease, we don't really have any way of judging the extent of the damage that it's going to cause.
Okay, thanks.
Uh-huh. Larry, do you have any other questions?
No, Senator, I'm good. Thank you, sir.
Okay. John, how about you?
Well, the judiciary is supposed to take up the nomination of Elena Kagan, and what you, having had a chance to meet her, what do you think?
Well, in fact, I have not had a chance to meet her. I'm not on that committee. I assume she's spending most of her time talking to members of that judiciary committee and trying to answer their questions in preparation for the hearing. I believe the hearing will start next week in the judiciary committee, and I would expect to get a chance to meet her once her nomination is gone through the committee and before it comes to the Senate floor.
But you didn't have a chance to meet her when she came up to the Hill, I guess, to meet informally.
I have not.
And how important would the release of those documents from the Clinton Library be for you regarding, I guess, her work for the Clinton administration?
Well, I obviously am going to wait and see what comes out at the hearing, but my strong impression is that she is eminently qualified to be a member of the Supreme Court. She's succeeded in a variety of difficult, challenging positions. She obviously has the intellectual capacity to be a justice of the Supreme Court, and seems to have the confidence of the president for her legal judgment. So I would lean heavily towards supporting her, absent some bombshell revelation that I don't anticipate.
How tough, though, is it for a former solicitor to be one who's being considered for the Supreme Court? Isn't that one of the more interesting challenges, since you have a record, so to speak?
Well, I think that most people in the legal profession understand that when you are the lawyer for someone, and in the case of the solicitor, when you're the lawyer for the federal government, the executive branch, you take the positions that your client believes are in their best interest. And so I think she has been the solicitor now for some time over a year. She's done well in that job. I don't think that any position she's taken there will be something that she would be heavily criticized for.
Okay, I'll pass for now.
Okay. Let me go back and see now. Bill, did you have anything else?
I've got one more. The man named to be the head of the Minerals Management Service, Michael Bromwich, apparently has, for his energy background, an event with the big gas explosion down in El Paso years ago. He represented the company involved. That's the only evidence we can find that he has any energy-related environmental experience. Do you know of anything else?
I don't know what other background he's got on energy issues. I do know that his reputation as a very strong administrator and advocate are pretty well known here in Washington. So I've heard several people comment that he was a very capable individual and would do well, although he does not have extensive background in some of these energy issues.
Would it worry you that he represented the corporate end of that particular environmental event?
It would not worry me. As I say, I think there's a general recognition that people represent the client who hires them, and as long as the position he took was a credible position on behalf of that client, I don't think that should disqualify him from this kind of position.
That's it for me. Thanks.
Okay. Larry, I think Larry asked his last question. John, you're the last one standing.
Okay, sounds familiar. When it comes to the unemployment benefits, you know, having not made it through the Senate the last time, what do you see happening now?
Well, I don't know. I'm sure that'll be on our agenda this week to see whether we can find a way to get the votes necessary to keep in place those extended unemployment benefits. I've advocated that we should do so because unemployment has remained historically high, and we need to get that unemployment number down somewhat before we back away from our willingness to provide the enhanced benefits that have been there.
How much of a factor do you think that maybe, at least you hear from talk show radio hosts, that maybe some of the Democrats were getting a little concerned about the so-called structural budget deficit, and they needed to find a way to pay for these extending the benefits? Do you think that's the case, or what?
Well, I think that there's been a drumbeat, a growing drumbeat here in the Congress, that Congress needs to pull in its horns and begin paying for everything that is accepted or passed through the Congress. There's a great debate going on between economists. Some are advocating that we should do just that. We should focus our attention on deficit reduction at this point. Others are saying that that is very unwise, that at this point we still need to get more Americans employed, and we should be stimulating the economy still, and that in the long term the deficit will be reduced by getting more and more people on payrolls. And so that should be our priority.
Not that you're on appropriation, but isn't there some philosophy being touted, which is pay as you go?
Well, we have passed legislation that provides a requirement that you pay for things. When you're appropriating money, you find some way either to raise the revenue through taxes or you cut spending somewhere else to offset the cost of the new spending that you're approving. There are exceptions in that legislation, though, and one of those exceptions has been these unemployment benefits, these extended unemployment benefits that were put in place as part of the Recovery Act.
I just have a couple other topics, if I may.
Sure.
I haven't heard much recently about the conference on the banking regulation bill. What's happening there?
Well, as I understand it, they're going to try to complete their work this week and report back a bill to the two houses of Congress so that we can pass that conference report sometime next week before Congress leaves town for the 4th of July week of recess. That's the schedule. There's a lot of stories about what will still be in the bill, what will be watered down, what will be strengthened. I think we're still unsure about exactly the answer in each of those cases.
Isn't the House version a little more aggressive, though, than the Senate version?
I don't know that that's true overall. I think the Senate version was a stronger bill than the House version in some respects. So I think you have to get into the detail of it in order to make a judgment.
And just one other topic. I understand, at least from the people here in McKinley County, your staff has been rather involved in trying to make some headway for the new Gallup Indian Medical Center. And from what you've heard from your staff, does it look like that project could become a reality anytime soon?
Well, I know we have had some meetings with the Indian Health Service and trying to move that project forward. I don't have any answer to give you today as far as what the timing might be, but we're doing our best to move that project up.